Well, some lucky bird watchers may get the chance to see thousands of sandhill cranes gather in Wisconsin's cornfields this fall, as we were kind of just hearing a few seconds ago. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. With me today, Ann Lacey. She is the Crane Research Coordinator for the International Crane Foundation. She's a leading expert in North American crane species, and she'll be telling us about the foundation's efforts to bring back crane populations, especially the whooping crane. What's going on with cranes in your area? What questions do you have about the Crane Foundation? Maybe you've got some photos you can post up on our Facebook page. I'd love to see those as well. You can join the conversation at 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at ideas@wpr.org or go ahead and post questions and or photos on our Facebook page. Love to hear from you. Ann Lacey, welcome. Good to have you with us.
It is great to be here. Thank you.
Well, I tell you what, for those who aren't familiar with the International Crane Foundation, maybe you could give us some background on that organization.
Oh, the brief history of the International Crane Foundation. Why is the International Center for the Study of Cranes of the World in Baraboo, Wisconsin? Well, it turns out that Ron Sawi, one of our co-founders, met George Archibald at Cornell University, where they're both graduate students, and they were both working on cranes and very passionate about this family of birds. And so Ron's family happened to have a horse farm in Baraboo, Wisconsin, and they started raising cranes there instead of horses. So we have since moved to a new site, and we have an active visitor program and aviculturists that are raising all the 15 species of crane. It's the only place in the world where you can see all 15, and so we have a lot of work going on all over the world.
I love visiting the foundation. It's such a wonderful site. You can spend a lot of time there.
Yeah, not just the cranes. We also have prairie restorations on site to natural wetlands and oak woodlands. So I encourage people to come and tour our trails as well.
Yeah, and the settings that you provide for the cranes, there are some really beautiful settings that you have. Eh?
As a matter of fact, yeah, we have right now, people might know about our whooping crane exhibit, which is just a gorgeous setting to see whooping cranes as they should be, as we want them to be in the wild. And we have, it's not new anymore, our Africa exhibit, where the four endemic African crane species are in settings where it might look, if you were in Africa, seeing those birds. And we have grand plans to start groundbreaking in a year or so for new exhibits also. So we hope that all of our cranes will enjoy bigger exhibits and more naturalistic, lots of water, lots of plants that they can dig around in. So for more information on that, you can go to our website, www.savingcranes.org.
Savingcranes.org. You know, one of the things that I always enjoy when you go there and the crane may, go to a particular area where there's a crane, they'll often walk right up to the fence.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
In fact, I think pretty much every time they'll walk right up to the fence. So you're looking a foot away
from a bird that can look you in the eye.
Yes.
It's quite intimidating.
it's really something to experience. The first time I thought, wow, it's walking right up to me.
Cranes are known for being some of the most territorial birds in the bird world, and so that is their territory, and that is them defending it. They're not exactly saying, hi, welcome. They might be saying, move along.
Move along. Well, how do you fund? How are you funded?
We have a very robust membership really supports a lot of our programs, but we also, especially for our reintroductions for whooping cranes, we have a lot of, those are an endangered species, so technically they are owned by the Fish and Wildlife Service, so we get a lot of support through them, and a lot of partners and grants mostly is how we do a lot of our research, but our membership is a fantastic set of folks.
And you've been in the program's been in the news, the Hooper program, regarding parenting reared chicks raised in captivity and then entering the wild.
Yeah, that's not a new thing, but it's really what we have been focusing on, how we are releasing the whooping cranes in the last few years. So these are, instead of what people might know, that we have been releasing birds into the wild that are raised by people in costume. And we do the best that we can, but we don't know. We don't know how to be cranes, I will admit to that. I'm not one of them, but we do our best. But we realize that maybe we should try letting real whooping cranes raise them. So our captive population of whooping cranes in various captive centers are good parents. And so they raise the chicks, and then we take them. They're not very happy about that, but it's okay because they're going out into the wild, and we pair them up with wild birds that are already out on the landscape and migrating from Wisconsin to points south. And so it's not exactly an adoption, but we really just want those older birds to accept them into their company and allow them to follow along to great foraging areas and roosting spots here in Wisconsin and then along the way to migration. That's how they learn the route.
And how are they doing in the wild?
Well, so far, so good. The birds that we have released this year, we have 18 new birds on the landscape in Wisconsin this year. For better or for worse, only two of them are wild hatched. So that's really the number that we want to increase. But 16 of them were birds that we raised in captivity and put out there. And so far, they're all doing really, really well. And it might be another month before they fly south. So we shall see.
Very cool. Well, Janet in Montello has a question for you. Let's go there. Janet, hi.
Hi. Gosh, I've been to the International Crane Foundation in Baraboo, and just it's time to make another trip. I just love going there. But my question is, with all the work you have done to restore the cranes, now the hunters say the numbers are too many, and they're craving a hunting season. And last spring at the Conservation Congress, the vote was pretty close, 2,349 for a hunt, 2,049 against it. So what can we as non-hunters do to prevent this?
Well, then that's exactly what it comes down to, Janet. So thank you very much for visiting, and please do come back. As far as the crane hunt goes, looking at the sandhill crane as a natural resource of Wisconsin, should they be hunted? And there's a management plan for sandhill cranes. And I don't think what people might realize is in the management plan, there is an option for using them as a resource for ecotourism, for people going to see cranes and having crane festivals and things like that. So there are options other than hunting for those who prefer sandhill cranes not be hunted. And really what it takes is people continuing to make their voice heard in that manner. There are plenty of options for people that want to hunt cranes to go other places where they are. It does require them to travel, but many people do that for other species that are more on the exotic end of the spectrum. So there are options if the people of Wisconsin decide that they might prefer to use this resource as looking at them through binoculars rather than down the sight of a gun.
Yeah, there we go. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. Love to hear from you. Say, how long do sandhills live, generally?
If the biggest risk to the birds is when they are chicks and before they can fly, and then maybe their first migration. You know, they're naive to the landscape, and there's lots of things out there that they might not know about. So if they can live through their first year, they can live upwards of 20 to 30 years in the wild.
Wow. 20 to 30?
Yeah, yeah. And this has been shown through many banding studies that they can live a good long time.
Let's talk about their how they live their lives. Can you talk about
the life and times of the sandhill crane?
Yeah.
We see that all the time. They are, especially this time of year, I'm usually talking with you in the spring and we talk about the cranes coming back. And I realize that for many people, they're a sign of fall too. I have talked with folks about going to the Platte River in the spring. Different population of cranes than we have here in Wisconsin flies through the central flyway of the United States, and they stage in large numbers in the spring before they go to their breeding grounds. Our population has the exact opposite phenology. They stage before they go south for the winter, and they don't go nearly as far as the other migration. But our abundant cornfields really fuel up those birds. So that's why we see these really large congregations of cranes in our fall. So Wisconsin resident birds will gather up into large roosting areas. They're numerous in the state, but they're also joined by birds from Minnesota and the UP and even in Ontario as they're coming down and staging here before they go to points south.
And where are the best staging areas? Or if you want to see them, where's the best?
Oh, there's so many nice spots in Wisconsin. So Horicon and Nisida National Wildlife Refuges are great. Sandhill Wildlife Area, I believe they have had crane viewing tours through our partners at the Natural Resources Foundation as well. The Wisconsin River near Spring Green and Arena, between Portage and the Dells, there's large congregations of birds that you can see there. There's not very many places that you can actually go to the river to watch them come in, as you would be able to at the Platte River in Nebraska, but you can see them out in the field. So those are some really great spots to go.
Let's go to Jacob in Burlington. Thank you for calling, Jacob. Appreciate your call.
Hi, thanks. Last fall, we had the pleasure of seeing a whooping crane with two adult sandhills, and we were assuming it was an individual that was hatched, an egg that was perhaps hatched by the adult sandhills. My question is that working for the whooping crane population? Are those individuals reared by sandhills? Are they becoming adults and adding to the breeding population of the whooping cranes? I guess, is that working? What's the success of that part of the program?
Thank you, Jacob. That is a fascinating observation. So I'll take a few steps back and explain that this reintroduction in Wisconsin is the fourth try at reintroducing whooping cranes, a different population of whooping cranes, into North America. There was a first try in the Rocky Mountain population of sandhill cranes. Whooping crane eggs were put into sandhill crane nests, thinking just what you have observed, that sandhill crane parents would raise up those birds because they're great parents and they could learn the migration route and then all would be well. Except that when the first thing that you see coming out of the egg is a sandhill crane, and whooping cranes don't have mirrors, they don't know that they're not sandhill cranes. So they imprinted on sandhills and did not pair with each other.
And we're going to stop right there, and we'll tell the rest of the story after we take a look at the news, weather, and find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Net. Ann Lacy will be with us right up until 12:30, so you stay with us back after the news. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. We're talking about the efforts of the International Crane Foundation to reestablish crane populations. Larry Mueller here, my guest, Ann Lacy. She is the crane research coordinator for the International Crane Foundation, and I'm really a leading expert in North American crane species and has been with the organization for 16 years now. She got her MS, Master of Science in Biology, at the University of Minnesota in Duluth. And you may have some questions for her about cranes, and I hope you'll join in our conversation. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. And if you got a nice crane photo, we'd love to see that as well on our Facebook page. And Jacob was asking about how efforts had gone in terms of other crane species actually raising whoopers. And you were giving us a little bit of a history there when we broke the news.
Quick recap, there was an experiment done to foster whooping cranes by sandhill crane parents, and it did not work, and that was ended after 10 years. So the one that you saw in Wisconsin, Jacob, was likely a bird that was raised by whooping cranes, real whooping crane parents, or at the very least people dressed in costumes so as not to be people and mimicking a crane. And so we have a puppet head so that they know what that red head and that black beak. So they know that they're whooping cranes. However, the problem with whooping cranes is they are the rarest crane species on Earth. And so here in Wisconsin, they're still a very rare species. So when you see one with sandhill cranes, it's because we have very few whooping cranes, but plenty of sandhill cranes. And so I think they were probably just associating, but that wasn't a familial scene that you saw.
All right, there we go. So we don't have enough whoopers out there to raise potential.
Well, I should have wrote this down. 26 pairs of whooping cranes that nested this year.
Okay.
So we have 113 now whooping cranes out in the wild in Wisconsin. Over half of those now are paired birds that are parenting or, you know, at least attempting to nest territorial. So that's a good thing. So it's still a matter of they take 3 years before they reach sexual maturity where they can build those nests and lay eggs. And so in that interim time, that's when they find their mates and set up a territory. And so they have to find each other. And that's one of the big risks with a rare species is getting them to find each other.
I've done a number of bird shows, and I've often had people like Jacob call and say, oh, I saw, I don't know, I think it might have been a whooping crane out there with the sand hills. Can you just, for those who might, what actually would they look like out there in the field?
Right. We do have a species, all the species of crane that are listed on our website also with calls and everything. So we can look there to have a kind of a side-by-side comparison. Whooping cranes are big and they are white and they are truly, truly white. And people do often think, you know, part of it is wishful thinking. I have suffered the same. You want to see a whooping crane out in the fields. And sometimes those sandhills can be so light gray that they're silvery. And especially if the light is right, they're shimmery. But they just don't have that lily white feathers with those jet black wingtips. And so it's a matter of contrast. Whooping cranes are slightly bigger. They're, you know, 6 feet-ish tall, whereas the sandhills are a little bit shorter than that. So, but if you see them side by side, there is no mistaking it. But sometimes it's easy to think that you have a few whooping cranes flying over you when they're really light.
Stuart and Aaron, thank you very much for waiting. What's on your mind?
Hi, Larry and Ann. We're lucky. We're near Holly Hill Church rural area, and we have a creek bottom that the sandhill cranes have been coming to for probably 25 years. They are indeed the first harbinger of spring, well ahead of everybody else. And I'm just curious, do the same cranes come back to the same little creek bottom every year?
Yeah,
I bet they do. That's our theme for the day. Cranes are the first to show, last to go, from Wisconsin. So we have a long-term study area that is in a little town called Briggsville. It's right outside of Wisconsin Dells and Portage, kind of in between. So we have actually been marking sandhill cranes there in that little area, a nice breeding area for cranes, since the early 1990s. And through that phenomenal data set, we can show that not only do territorial birds come back year after year, more often than not, the same birds. Again, they're long-lived, and they keep those pair bonds for a long time, more often than not. But their chicks also will set up territories if there is one available, and they can get in. They will set up a territory nearby as well. Males will be closer to what we call their natal territory, more so than females. That's how they control inbreeding. The females will go farther away. But yeah, those two birds, it's hard to know when one is missing and when one is replaced if they're not marked like we do, but I would bet that they're the same birds.
Yeah.
That's nice to know. Can we also assume that most of the sandhills we see up here are going to the Platte River for the winter, or... Maybe not.
Not definitely not. There might be a little bit of overlap, and they might get a wild hair and go straight west. But for the most part, all of our sandhills go kind of southeast. It used to be that almost all of the birds would winter in Florida, but now we're showing over time that they won't even go past Indiana. Quite a few birds will winter in Indiana. Many winter in Tennessee and Alabama, and we have had our marked birds even show up in Louisiana, so we know that they go straight south down the Mississippi.
Here we go.
So when you drive to Colorado and see all those cranes along the Platte River, where are they there year round?
They are staging on their way to their breeding grounds in Canada, Alaska, and even over into Siberia. So that's why they're waiting.
That's a long. Yep. Yeah, I guess not, Stuart. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. That's a long flight.
That is a long way.
Donna in Marquette County, your turn. Hi, Donna.
Hi. I just had a question. I live in Marquette, and I'm a big birder, and I'm for sandhills, but I am also hearing a lot of, you know, things that they really wipe out a lot of crops. They destroy the corn crops, and they really are a pest here. And so how much truth is that? Because I don't see them going and doing that. And it's really frustrating for me to hear that all the time.
Right. Happy to shed some light on that. Corn is one of their favorite foods. There's a lot of energy in corn. So that's why we see them in our harvested cornfields in the fall here in Wisconsin. However, they also like corn in the spring. And it is true that they can do a lot of damage in cornfields. They drill into fields that the little emerging sprout, and they can pop out that corn seed. However, we have worked with a company that has developed a chemical that you can put on corn seed before it's put in the ground that will deter them. You'll still see cranes in the field, and I have seen them dig out that corn seed and literally spit it out. It's funny.
Not good.
It's a funny thing. It's probably very, very bitter and probably causes some intestinal distress. But they don't eat very much because they learn that that is no good. And then they stay in the fields and they'll eat other things. They are omnivores. But corn is an easy thing. But we are grateful that we have helped to try to alleviate that. And so that is available in the marketplace. It is called Avapel, which aptly named chemical, and you can get that at your local cooperatives, and lots of information out there about that.
Yeah, interesting. Thank you, Donna. Appreciate your call. Let's go to Ellie in Appleton next. Hi, Ellie.
Hi. A couple of Saturday evenings ago at dusk, we went to the Sandhill Preserve west of near Wisconsin Rapids and Babcock, and interestingly enough, we didn't see one sandhill crane, but as we were entering the preserve, we saw a notice just written on a piece of cardboard saying that two whooping cranes had been spotted earlier that day. So we drove to the spot where they had been seen at 11, and they were still there at 6:30. So we were thrilled to see a couple of whoopers out in the field there, and I can't guarantee you that they would still be back if somebody went there now, but they were there apparently pretty much of the day, and it was such a thrill to see them and hear them call. I actually, of course, videoed that on my cell phone, so I have the call right here anytime I want to hear it.
Excellent.
Oh.
As of yesterday, those two were still at Sandhill. Yeah, that's a younger pair, a new pair that we have, and so that would be nice if they set up shop somewhere around there and nested next year and maybe raise some chicks.
Yeah, cool. Great. Thanks, Ellie.
Thank you. Yeah.
Jim in Larson, Wisconsin, your turn. Hi, Jim.
Hello, Larry. It's so nice to talk with you again.
Thank you.
I live right on Lake Poygan, and I have a couple things to say here. One is that about 3 years ago, we noticed these two sandhills were obviously nesting right on this curve of this road. And I'd see them every day. And pretty soon I was so excited because I saw the little one, and I called my wife. I said, oh, my God. I saw that ugly little beast. He was out there. You know, they're so awkward and funny looking when they're little. And so we kept our eyes on it for a while. And pretty soon, my wife called me, and she was laughing hysterically because she stopped because the little one was standing next to the road. And when she stopped, I don't know, the male, female, whatever, came over and started pecking on the car.
Yeah.
Like, get out of here. Get out of here. This is my baby, you know?
And, pretty much.
And every year since then, we've been seeing the same ones virtually on the exact same spot. Now, living on the lake, we get woke up every morning about an hour and a half before daylight because the cranes start flying. So if anybody wants to come to Lake Poygan or Lake Beautimore, there's islands out there where people can walk around and observe all the pelicans and the sandhills. And there's times when the sky is just black with sandhills.
It's totally black
with them. I've never seen so many in my life.
Good staging area, yes. And another big white bird with black wingtips in Wisconsin that can be mistaken for a whooping crane. So you have to look close.
Yeah.
Oh, my. Yeah, those pelicans are so neat. We have an island out there. Call it Pelican Island. And it's the only white island. The white rock island.
Yes.
Out there in the lake.
Even when the birds leave, it's probably white.
Yeah, probably.
Exactly. Okay. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Jim. Thank you very much for calling. Oh, good stories there. Bob in Bayfield County, let's go to you next. Hi, Bob.
Hi. Just a quick comment and then a question. Up here bear hunting by Lake Nebagamon, Brule, Bayfield County, way deep in the forest, and all of a sudden we come upon sandhill cranes. I grew up in central Wisconsin. I know what they look like. Some of the people up here, I guess we didn't realize that they're a bird of the forest. And then I guess the question is, what do they eat? I mean, these are in cutover areas in the middle of big blocks of forest, and there's like two or three sandhills. Yeah. I'll take it off the air.
All right, thanks for calling.
Interesting. As long as you didn't see them perched in trees.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily unusual. I mean, we've had... our annual Midwest crane count is every spring in April, and so you can look for information on our website or Facebook about that. So those wetlands that you have up in northern Wisconsin are great, but they're surrounded by forest instead of agriculture. So the density of cranes is less up in northern Wisconsin than we have down here. But they're omnivores, so they must be finding something to eat. So
yeah.
Snakes and bugs and grubs and mice and grains of various kinds.
There'd be all kinds of things, actually, in an area like that.
Yeah, and it's a healthy forest. It's pretty rare to see them in a closed canopy forest. They might just be moving through, or it's open enough underneath that they feel safe in there, but they probably would prefer to be in that cutover area that's nice and open so they can see what's around them.
Bob in Chilton, your turn. Hi, Bob.
Good morning. Ann, I wanted to convey a experience I had a few weeks ago out biking in Calumet County, just west of Brilliant, which is on Highway HR north of the Brilliant Marsh and Wildlife Center. And I have seen the occasional pair of sandhills on my biking rounds, but this time I looked over in a field along Highway HR and I saw literally hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of sandhills milling about, not flying at all, and apparently feeding. And I couldn't believe my eyes when I saw this suddenly appear.
Hello, Bob. I know that you have hundreds and hundreds of miles put on in Wisconsin, so I'm actually shocked that you haven't seen that before. It might have been a harvested soybean field or a harvested wheat field.
It did. It looked like a harvested field shortly groomed, and lots of chicks, too, lots of smaller ones that were further away from the road, and then the adults closer to the road.
Yeah. Smart. They're smart parents.
Yeah, that is really cool. Thanks, Bob.
Thanks for your observation, Bob. Good to hear from you.
Jennifer in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi. Yes, I've had the great fortune of seeing hoopers at the Aransas Wildlife Refuge in Texas.
Yeah.
And because that's where Hurricane Harvey went through, I was a little concerned about the condition of their wintering grounds there. I know a lot of the foliage was stripped off because it's very, very close to Rockport, which is was the center of the storm. And I just wondered what your thoughts were on that, Ann.
Oh, yes. Thank you, Jennifer. And you've beaten me to that. I have not had the pleasure of going to Aransas yet, but hope to.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. So that, unfortunately, it's one of those things that it is a danger in the wintering grounds to have too little water down there, because cranes need fresh water to drink, and their favorite food source is the blue crab, which needs kind of an intermediate kind of salinity. And with the horrific rains that we saw coming out of Texas, well, all of that fresh water flowed out, and it pushed those crabs way, way, way out into the bay and probably beyond the reach of the cranes. Mm. However, they're not there yet. They've just begun their migration, so the whooping cranes and some sandhill cranes that winter down in that area, though they use more uplands, the whooping cranes aren't on their wintering territories yet, so that might moderate. Good news is that they have plenty of fresh water, perhaps, if the ponds also might have been inundated by the storm surge. So we have a big crew down in Texas that is getting dug in right now, and our staff is doing a lot of work to try to figure out exactly what changed before the birds get there and so that we can monitor when they do.
Oh, great. I'm glad to hear that. Thank you.
You bet.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Let's see. Rod in Arlington, your turn. Hi, Rod.
Hey, how you doing today? Thank you for my call. A quick question. I'll actually a statement once first. Neighbors had wheat field several years ago, and after they cleared the wheat off, I stopped counting at 70 cranes in the field gleaning what was left by the combine. And my question was, why hunt cranes? What do they use them for? I mean, they're not like a pheasant or a grouse or a turkey as far as eating that I know of, so why hunt them?
Well, you are actually correct that they're not like those species. But they are eaten for food. They have a lot of red meat in them. And I have not partaken of that, but there are a lot of people that have great recipes for crane. And a lot of the people that harvest birds mostly out of the central flyway, where they have long established hunting seasons, they say that it is very good eating. So there is a lot of meat on a crane. You'd never know it from looking at those skinny legs, but...
No, yeah. You wouldn't, and they are such a beautiful bird. My wife and I have taken in on the counts in the spring because we overlook Shenandoah Marsh.
Oh, super.
North of Madison.
Yeah.
And, that was the area where the neighbor's field had gotten... the wheat was taken off of it from the winter wheat, and one day I went out there, and there was, like I said, I stopped counting at 70 because it kept moving on me.
Yep. Yeah. You count the legs and divide by two.
Yeah, there you go.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, Rod. Judy and Racine, your turn. Hi, Judy.
Hi. I just wanted to mention Jasper Pulaski down in Indiana. We went down there to see the cranes gathering, and it was awesome.
Ah, Judy, I agree. They have a lovely, lovely observation deck, and it's like a giant football field that is out in front of you, and the cranes will come in from the surrounding fields. It's a little oasis in northwestern Indiana, and it is surrounded by agricultural fields, and the birds will come into right this giant field in front of the observation deck and kind of mill about for an hour or so before they hop over the trees into their water roost.
Oh, and
it is spectacular. It's a great view.
Sunset, it was really a gorgeous sight.
And you might see a whooping crane if you're lucky. So I would recommend that maybe end of November, even into December. But they're already starting to gather there.
Wow. Thank you, Judy. Thank you very much for calling. I appreciate your call. In our last minute, tell us how we can help the Crane Foundation.
Oh, gosh. Visit us, learn more about cranes and wetlands and how wetlands help all of us. Cranes are really the keystone species. They're the ones that you can see, but they're really an indicator of a healthy wetland. And so if you're going to visit the Crane Foundation, you have to hurry because we're only open until the 31st of October. But if you miss that, please do come back on April 15th when we open up again and visit our trails and learn about prairie restoration and our research around the world.
And you're always looking for volunteers, I assume, or not?
Yeah, we do have an extraordinary volunteer program, and so there's also information about that on how you can help in various departments for us, so we would encourage that too. Become a member. That is the best way to help cranes all over the world.
And to do that, you go where?
www.savingcranes.org.
www.savingcranes.org. And we have a link up on our Facebook page for that. And always a pleasure.
It was great to be here. Thank you.
Great to have you back. And we'll have her back again. We'll do this again. Our guest, Ann Lacy, she is the Crane Research Coordinator for the International Crane Foundation, a leading expert in North American crane species. Always great to have her come by, and certainly we will do this all over again. And we have some great shows coming up for you tomorrow. For one thing, we'll be talking to the author of a book about ordinary people who faced daunting medical challenges and refused to give up. So they've refused to give up hope, and I hope that you will join us for that. In the meantime, thank you for listening. Please stay with us. Lots more in store here on the Ideas Network.